When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM. When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
You know, I met him and for a second got excited that he wanted to work with me, and then it didn't pan out. And
what if they had that moment where they were like, let's get a young man up here, Danny, and you're like,
oh. Yeah. this is a guy he rejected.
Yeah.
Tell us all, what was it like to be rejected by him? That would be hilarious. We wanted to have him here just to talk about the sheer and utter disappointment, the sinking feeling that he felt when he was never heard back again.
Everybody listen to Derek Carter.
Yeah.
We all know he's the party starter. So if you want to listen to a podcast for free, listen to a Pocket Party. Pocket Party. Durant.
All right, we are recording. Here we go. Here's a little thing real quick. All right, here we go. Ready?
I like it. Oh, I thought it was going to be a...
And we're back. Hey, everybody. It's your host, Darren Carter, the party starter. And welcome to another episode of the Pocket Party Podcast. As you can hear, we have roosters.
Yeah.
We have people working. We have birds chirping. And we have the wonderful Danny Lobel. How are you, Danny?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, man. So great to have you hear me at your beautiful house in the neighborhood here in West LA.
I love Darren Carter, the party starter. He's such a great... I've known about that tag for many years, as long as I've known you. But I don't know if I've ever told you that I liked it.
Oh, thank you.
What about... Have you ever had a character come and challenge, like, Carl Fender, the party ender, or something, you know, like,
yeah,
that, like, it comes to the show, like, oh, it's my arch nemesis, Carl Fender, the party ender.
It's funny, Jimmy Brogan sometimes calls himself that, like, if we're
the
on
the party ender,
yeah, he's like, I'm the party ender, you know,
yeah, oh,
so yeah, people have thought of that,
but the name would have to rhyme,
yes, you know? That's the thing, it
Darren
doesn't really,
Carter, party starter.
Yeah.
Carl Fender, the party ender. You know?
I used to do a joke where I was like, man, my real name is Tanner. I was almost Darren Tanner, the event planner. But that's not even true, though. So it's like, yeah. And it's funny. I just embrace it. I'm like, it rhymes. It used to be just like a little bit, you know, that I would do. And then I dropped it.
And it's catchy, though.
But then I'm like, half this business, you want people to remember you and your name and how are they going to, you know.
I like it.
Every now and then I would get in my head and be like, I wonder, what would I... Because I was at Lake Tahoe, and there was a guy called, I think his name was like Artie, the one-man party, and he had like a keyboard, and he looked real cheesy, and I was like, oh, is that what I look like to other people?
But no, but I like... You don't look like that, but
yeah.
I mean, I don't know what that looks like, but I'm imagining what it looks like.
Yeah.
But I like the party starter. And it's interesting also because it doesn't imply that you stay for the party.
That's true. That is true,
you just
Danny.
Just start it.
Yep.
Move on.
And they move on. Exactly. Like sometimes people will laugh, and I'm not even trying to make them laugh. Like I was telling a comedy club owner once, he goes, how was your New Year's? I go, oh, man, you know, they had dancing afterwards, and then they wanted me to do this thing at the end. I go, I just wanted to go home, but I had to stick around. So I went up to the very top floor of this of the venue, mm-hmm. and I found a tiny bathroom, and I just went in there and started playing, like, online chess. And he goes, some party starter you are. I'm like, well, that's true. I start the parties. I don't necessarily attend them.
Right.
So.
You're like Gatsby.
Yeah.
Like the great Gatsby would throw a party, but then he would watch it from the window and not attend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. It's like, you know, especially I was thinking, like, the things that, I guess it depends on what people consider party. Like, you know, like younger people, they might think it's like, you know, drugs or alcohol. But I'm like, not in any of that. So I really enjoy, you know.
That's another one who had a tag, yeah. The great Gatsby. It wasn't just Gatsby. When you talk about him, you have to add the great.
The great. The great party starter. Well, that's... I have to let other people do that. I can't... That's really... I could not run into, like... Hi, guys. I'm Darren Carter, the great party starter.
The great party starter.
Yeah.
Not just any party. These are great parties.
They'd have to really... Man, expectations would be so high. Oh, yeah. We're figuring out where to plug in and...
I think this is better for me.
Yeah, this is good, right? Yeah, like,
because now I don't have to...
We're back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have so many options at your house here. It's... Let me ask you, the noise
being heckled.
It's funny because my nickname before the party started was Rooster.
Rooster, yeah, so, I remembered that. That's what I was saying.
So it's great to have these roosters back here. And
yeah,
I thought it was going to be the neighbors, and I'm like, no, you're the neighbor with the roosters.
So my life repeats. You know, I had a rooster situation in Brooklyn years ago, and I actually wound up. There's a whole story behind it that I wound up doing on This American Life about getting rid of that rooster. Mm. And so life repeats, and now here we are about 11 years after that, and I bought these chickens as a present because I'm like, you know, like an old Bukharian man or something. I bought these chickens for my wife as a wedding present, four mm-hmm. chickens. Here, I bring you chickens for for betroth me. And,
and how long ago was that wedding? That was a while ago.
8 years ago.
So you've had chickens for 8 years?
So yeah, so this crop of chickens. So I didn't have chickens in California before that. I had them in New York, but my wife and I really liked having chickens, so I thought, you know, it'd be a nice surprise.
Yeah.
Show up the day before the wedding or 2 days before with some chickens, and here, we're starting a family, you know, starting a life. So I brought these four chickens, and three of them have since passed, but one of them is still with us. My wife named them all. The one we still have is Bowie. Because she's got these bell-bottom type of feathers, and she thought it would be a good name. So so we still have Bowie, and she's all alone, and I thought, oh, that's depressing for her. I'll go get another chicken to keep her company. Mm. So I went and I bought a chick, because I thought, you know, you get more for your money if you buy them young.
Oh.
You get more years out of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So
oh, boy.
So I bought a chick, and it grew up into a rooster. And that's that white one right there.
Oh, wow. So, did you know it was going to be a rooster?
No, I thought it was a chicken. So
wow.
And they don't guarantee the gender of the chicks. They can't really tell.
That's a rooster, that one that's standing up there with the red hair, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
right. White hair, yeah. And then the
top one, the way up.
The top one's also a rooster. So then Bowie, you know, had babies, 8 years old.
Wow.
She's an old mom. And she had these babies, these two babies. Three, actually, one died very young, but we were left with two, and one's a chicken and one's another rooster. So now I got these two roosters again, and I'm back to square one where I was 11 years ago in Brooklyn trying to get rid of roosters because you get noise complaints.
So break it down. How many roosters, how many chickens right now?
So then I have another coop of chickens that are not from the wedding. That's another story. But I have, from the wedding, I still have one chicken. And then I have the rooster that I bought thinking it was a chicken. And then they had two babies, which is another chicken and a rooster. And then the other coop is three other chickens that are not related to the story.
Wow.
Yeah, I think those are...
I think hopefully after this podcast, you know, we'll do a little vlog. You could show, we'll make a little video, a little short video, and we'll show the people the roosters, the chickens.
Sure, and if anyone wants to adopt these two roosters, they're beautiful, silky roosters. That's the kind of chicken the breed that they are.
Yeah.
And you just have to promise not to eat them, you know?
Yeah. I was just going to ask you that. That was my next question. Yeah. Are these strictly pets?
These are pet chickens, you know?
They're not food chickens. When you say they die, you're not like, well, you know.
No, the kids got hungry and
exactly
came in with that.
Because then kids came
I mean
along.
But there's nothing wrong with doing that either. Just these are not dedicated to that purpose.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I'm not. My wife was raised on a farm, so she's a lot
Yeah.
She thinks different about animals than I do.
Right.
You know, but I could see, like, it would be strange if you name a pet, you have it for 11 years, and then you're like,
okay. You have it for lunch.
Yeah, I couldn't, you know what I mean? I just...
Yeah. Yeah. Who are you eating?
No questions. You know?
Like, right.
Do they... do you... no, what's the, like... Is it legal to do this? Like, or I don't know.
It is legal.
Oh, that's cool.
So you're legally allowed to have up to two roosters in this neighborhood. It's zoned for that.
Oh.
But it's causing me problems with the neighbors. I don't want to upset people.
Yeah.
I like it personally because it feels natural. I like waking up to the sound of a rooster. But
you know, it's funny. I get the idea, and it's maybe that's adding to it. But this is almost like country living. You know, like when I come here, I see a rocking chair. You know, there's like this cool homey vibe. It kind of has that cozy like country living. I know we're in LA, but this could easily be somewhere else. Like this could be in the mountains, or you know,
for years I used to open for Ralphie May, the late great Ralphie May. And he used to say, to be like, Dan LaBelle, you're more of a hick than I am. And I'm from Arkansas. And you're a Jew from New York. I don't know how this happened.
Yeah, but you're just like a set of overalls away from my, you know, you got a camper, the whole thing.
Yeah,
you got
I like country living.
I do too. It's more mellow, right? It's like I like city living because I like the opportunities and the... But then I like having my space of like, you know, for me, I like Griffith Park. I like getting out there in nature. I like being away from, you know, all the city life. But then you're at the top of the mountain and then you see the traffic on the 5 and, you know, so like we're, you know, best of both worlds.
We're all trying to get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, where you're like, you know, not
10 literally hours. And figuratively, I guess. I mean, some people are only in it for this world. But I mean, me being somebody, you know, who's a man of faith. I'm in for the best of both worlds. I'm trying to get the best of this world. And if there's another world, which I believe there is,
me too.
I'll get the best of that world.
Yeah.
You know, so best of both worlds. I guess that's where it came from, right?
I think so. The best of both worlds. It was interesting, even driving here, I didn't take a freeway. So the GPS had me go through. And it's interesting when you go to someone's house the first time, like, you know, you have an idea in your mind. Like I looked it up and I'm like, I'm not going to say where it's at exactly, but I looked it up and I'm like, okay, I could take the freeway, but then this other way. And it was really cool, man. You start coming through like all these mansions and stuff, like Hancock Park area.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, wow, this is a... And then it looked and it said, like, you know, oh, I still have a ways to go. and then you go through another part where there was, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah, and then but it was just interesting seeing the different things that go through your mind, you know what I mean? Like, I already saw, when you gave me the address, somehow there was like a view of like, you know, this is... And I'm like, okay, I see where I'm going, but... It was just interesting that, and then to come here and have the country lifestyle still like,
so
I want to ask you something. We'll get to you have a movie coming out,
right?
I'll put it in the credits. I'd love to hear about that. I want to ask you about, I love your Jewish faith. I love how, and you know, and I was raised Christian. I am Christian, but I find there's a lot of similarities, like, you know. And I love it. Like when I hear you, it's not like this foreign thing where I'm like, oh, I don't even get that concept. I love how you, I'm going to countrify things, but like you wind things down on Friday night and then on Saturday, you know, like
fire them back up again.
You fire them back up again. We're taking phone calls, honey. But I love that the commitment of, you know, like, you know, we're going to slow, you know, we're going to, I guess you, I don't want to say the wrong thing, but like, no, not using electricity.
Right.
Observing the Sabbath.
Right. Know? So as we call it, Shomer Shabbat. Shomer in Hebrew really means a guard, like a guard over. So you're kind of guarding over Shabbat, protecting Shabbat, making sure that it continues to exist.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do it and you don't protect it, you lose it.
It's a tradition that could just kind of go away, and then
So I'm a Shabbat guardian.
Yeah,
guardians of the Shabbat.
I like that.
Guardians of the Shabbat.
I like
coming
that.
Soon.
yeah, coming soon. But not, and then you could do a joke, but not till sun up or so. I don't know.
Like, it was very hard for me, because I had to give up weekends at comedy clubs.
Yeah, I was gonna say because it wasn't like you. Started from you since you were knee high to a rooster. No,
right.
you start. So did you, didn't you like maybe went more secular? I guess they would say like, and then you.
Yeah,
you got older, you're like, okay, I'm going to start observing and guarding the Shabbat again.
It's like a long, long story, but a short version of it is I became very anti-religious in my 20s. And the more you kind of become anti-religious, the more you become anti-religious. Does that make sense? The more you become anti-religious, the more you become more anti-religious.
Oh.
So, yeah. In the same way that I think a lot of people, more they become religious, the more they become more religious, you know?
That's true.
Because you commit to things.
Yeah.
So if you're, anti-religious, you start out just mildly anti-religious, but over time, if you're committed, you know, you try to build on things. So I became more and more anti-religious. And I was like, I don't want to go anywhere near religious Judaism. Mm. I don't want to date any Jewish girls because they might bring me back into it. Mm. So I'm done with being part of the Jewish people. I was like, you know, I was really angry at it all. So anyway, my girlfriend who moved in with me, long story short, decides she wants to convert to Judaism. And I was fighting her on it very hard.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what I didn't want to get into. Yeah. So
that's hilarious. Yeah.
You know, but God had other plans. So basically, you know, years of the process of converting, I kind of wound up converting along with her. Mm. And I was able to see it through new eyes and see the beauty in it. And it was very good for my inner peace because, you know, when you're angry at something, you're angry, you know, inside. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm saying things that are not profound and they almost sound very stupid. You know, the more you do it, the more you do it. If you're angry, you're angry. But but if you're angry at something, you're holding on to anger, which is, you know, obvious. But just think about it, folks. So you don't want to have anger in your heart or feel that way about anything, I think. I mean, so inner peace is one of the best things you can have. But it took a lot of inner turmoil to get to it. Mm. And in the process of my wife becoming Jewish, I became much more Jewish. And I had to decide. I just started headlining clubs, and my career had really started picking up, and it was very hard for me to give that up because it was income, and it was also not just income. You know how hard we worked to get to that point.
Yeah.
So it was very, very hard for me. And it's still not bounced back to where it was career-wise, but I've been creative in trying to find ways around it and to maintain, you know, my comedy passions and creative passions and stuff like that.
So I was going to ask you, I mean, made it difficult? Like, let's say you get a book somewhere. Like, do you have to, or maybe things just happen where you're like, you know what? Okay, I just got to put that out of my mind. I'm going to be doing a club from Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Be like, I'm going to get a fan base, do my thing. I'll come in on a Tuesday. Is that how it?
Right. Yeah. So I won't do the Friday nights. I just won't do them. So, you know, if I get offered them, I turn them down.
But
now I don't get
do
offered much anymore because.
Would you do let's say, you know, come to Phoenix and do this comedy club, and you'd be like, okay, I'll do Thursday and I'll do Saturday and then Friday.
Whenever I can make that happen, great. Yeah. But most of the time people don't want to find someone just for a Friday night and they don't want to lose the weekend. So, but you know, anytime I can, I just did a week of shows in Aruba. And the fellow who runs it's a wonderful guy. And I said to him, you know, he said, come out to Aruba. I said, well, I won't perform Friday night. I don't want to mess you up, you know.
Yeah.
So he said, let me see if I have a time when I'm doing shows on the weeknights. Yeah. And I'll let you know. And he got back to me. He says, yeah, I actually have one where it'll be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are the shows. And there's no shows that weekend.
Mm.
And it turned out to be my birthday week. So I got to go to Aruba for my birthday and perform. And that was fantastic, nice. You know. And I thought, you know, look, you know, I have my rules and I stick to them.
Yeah.
The only hard part about Shabbat for me at this point still is the missing doing weekends of stand-up. Mm. That's
but you can,
it's not like I missed the weekend. I missed the amount of stand-up I was doing, but I love Shabbat.
I was wondering about this too, because I Saturday night, so you could do Saturday, but then I think the sun has to go down. What happens if the show, it's like, oh, it's starting at 7 and the sun's out, or I don't know how that works.
I won't do it.
Really?
It has to be after.
Completely, okay.
Yeah, either things are, to me, you know, I'm, there are people, certainly there are comedians who are observant Jews that will find workarounds like this. I'm not like that, though, because if I'm in it, I'm in it, you know?
You don't want to. Mm-hmm.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So I don't like to... You know, if something's sacred, it's sacred. It's right. Not half sacred. It's fully sacred. You know, like,
yeah.
I don't like to compromise values. Mm-hmm. So I won't do that. But, I mean, there are some people who say, look, I'm holding on to my values and I can make these compromises. Great. That's good for them. But that's not me. That's just not how I operate. I'm a very all or nothing kind of fella. So
I got one more question. I know I sound like a guy that's like new. It's like my first day.
Let's
say if I converted, I'm like, well, what about, I was wondering about like the time change. Is it like when it gets dark earlier? Is it like, oh, this is good, 'cause then I can go do a show or like in the summer when it gets dark at like 8:30? Like, does that come into play?
It does, for sure. Yeah, definitely. So when it gets dark earlier on Saturday nights, I could do it. Also, I did an Edinburgh Fringe show, and it got late. It got dark so late in Scotland on Friday nights that I was able to do my Friday night shows.
Oh.
Because...
Yeah.
You know, I just couldn't do Saturday night shows.
Yeah.
But you know, I would go late Saturday night and do other people's guest spots and stuff.
I really admire that. It's like, I listened to the podcast you do with Elon Gold, and Elon... Remember, he said that he would sometimes, you know, he does a lot of television work, and he would tell people, here's what my situation, and a lot of times they were cool with it. But remember, he said that there was one time that it was, was it Bones? I think so.
I think it was Bones.
It was like his fourth time, and he was like, and the guy was.
He said, sorry, can't.
Yeah. And I loved it. Elon was like, you know what? It's not worth it for me. Like, just you know.
That was on was the most recent Modern Day Philosophers podcast that I did. It was with Elon Gold. Really, really interesting, funny guy. Yeah.
That's another great podcast, you guys. Check out his podcast. He's got a couple of them, and Modern Day Philosophers.
Yeah.
I remember once you asked me to be on it, and I was like, I don't know anything about him.
Well,
and
I hope you'll still do it.
I will. It's funny, because every episode I've listened to, it sounds like that's what the guests usually
say,
too.
Everybody
like, philosopher, I'm not philosopher. And you're like, no, don't worry about that. Like,
sometimes they'll like really get like up in arms about it. That's fun, too. Why are you bringing this philosophy? I don't know. Well, it's the show.
Yeah, and George Wallace made me laugh because he was like, man, there you go again. Can we just get out of here? But he made it comedic.
Yeah.
You're like, well, then the philosopher said, and you're like, I don't give a damn about the. Can he speak clear English so we could. You know?
That's right.
Yeah. That was great. But
so I did one with this guy, Ray Allen, who's a friend of mine, comedian, when we were in Aruba. And the philosopher was. Well, I won't give it away, but it was a black philosopher, and it was like very militantly black philosophy. And he's like, why did you pick this out for me? And he got so upset. He's like, you know, a white Jewish guy, and you bring me this, I'm going to get in trouble commenting on it.
Is Ray Allen white or black?
Yeah, white Jewish guy.
Oh, he's white. Okay.
And he's like, well, what is this? You're going to get me canceled with this philosophy. And I don't pick them. Alex Fasella has always picked them. And I don't even know who it's going to be until I sit down with the person, because I don't like to look at it.
Oh, yeah, because I like that about it, where you're reading it for the first time. And
I don't want to come in, you know, with punchlines and the other person doesn't have any, you know, that's not fair. Or even thought punchlines, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's only fair that we both discover it at the same time. We both discovered at the same time that this is somebody who's going to be, we're going to, you know, it's going to have to be done with some finesse. And he thought I was like ambushing him with it. And I'm like, look, I don't even pick them. I don't. Yeah. But, you know, yeah. Well, I think we did a
modern
good job.
Modern day
with it.
Ways to get canceled.
With right.
Yeah.
Like, so, he couldn't even read the quotes.
He's like,
I don't think we should say that word or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. That's funny. So,
you know, whatever. But I said, look, you know, there's relatability in everything.
Yeah.
And you just take these ideas. As they relate to black people, relate them to how you feel as a Jewish person or, you know, whoever you are. These are, all ideas are universal. Mm-hmm. And we can all, you know, find empathy in everybody else's situations. And Absolutely. And even if you don't agree with somebody's philosophy, you can usually understand how they got there, or at least try to understand how they got there. It's interesting, you know?
You know, I was reading that, and I've heard people mention this to you before, that Marc Maron credits you as the original podcaster.
Well, I mean, what happened is he used to come on my podcast. I had the first, if not the first, then one of the very first ever comedy podcasts that interviewed comedians. And we started in 2004. Because I used to say the first, and then someone in Canada wrote me an email and said, I had one, I don't know who the guy was or anything. Mm-hmm. But then I thought, well, just because I've never heard of him, I can't dismiss him. Maybe right. Maybe he did start a week before me or something, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't care. It doesn't even matter to me who's the first.
You were one of the first comedy podcasts.
One of the first.
Yeah, there you go.
So
yeah.
So anyway, so Mark used to come on my podcast. And then I remember we were at Comics. COMIX was a club in the Meatpacking District. And we're sitting at the bar, and he's like, I feel like I should start a podcast, man. And I'm like, we'll do it. And he's like, can you help me? Do you want to do it with me? Do you want to be my co-host?
Oh.
And I was like, no, I don't want to do that, because I didn't want to, you know, I was trying to focus on mine. And I love Mark, but I also don't think that Mark and I would work very well together, because it would have to be very much his way, and I would get frustrated.
Yeah.
And I think I'm right about that. I also don't think it would have become WTF. It would have been maybe a predecessor, and then we would have done something, because people say, you could have been WTF, man. I think it would have been something that we did for a little while, and then our friendship fell apart, and then he did WTF.
Right.
So I don't think that would have been good. But I told him, you know, this is what you should do, and this is the equipment at the time I think you should get. And you know, he asked me one or two follow-up times, and he also talked to other people as well, but, you know, so I helped him along with getting it going.
When you started, put that a little bit closer, by the way, because you see my setup, right? I got the camera there, the PodTrack P4.
I like the P4. The P4 is an amazing little, Zoom makes it, and it's a fantastic little recorder. I have one, too.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
It's great, right? I think I bought it for like $199
it's
or something.
Cheap, and it's got like... It used to be like thousands of dollars to do what this thing does. You couldn't have something so portable, and you could put a Bluetooth adapter and patch in your cell phone. Do you know about that?
Yeah, I do that. I usually do it right here.
It's unreal. This whole thing is just incredible.
When you started, were you mobile when you started, or they had to come to you when you started podcasting?
So when I started in my college radio station. I was already doing a college radio show.
What's up, guys? How you like the show so far? Pretty good, right? Kind of weird that I'm out here in the country with a chair next to me. But anyways, if you like this show and you want to help out, go to Cameo. I do birthday shout-outs, anniversary shout-outs. Or if you just want to do a donation, go to DarrenCarter.com, PayPal, or Venmo at Darren Carter Comic. Now let's get back to the show.
And I was roommates with a guy who... was a subscriber to Wired magazine, and there was an article about this new thing called podcasting, and I was looking at his magazine, and I said, could we do this with my college radio show? Could we make it a podcast? And like, nobody knew what a podcast was or how to make a podcast. Mm. And he said, I think I could look into how to make a podcast, and we could do it, but I have to be on the show.
Yeah.
You have to put me on the show. And I thought, well, is that even worth it? Like, what's a podcast?
Yeah.
And I thought, all right, let me try him on the show anyway. Maybe it would be good. We didn't really vibe on the air. It wasn't good. But he did get initially the podcast. Back then, you had to write code to make a podcast.
Wow.
So you couldn't, there wasn't just like a thing you submit your podcast in. You had to like, you know, I had to know about nerdy stuff. So he helped me get it going, and then someone else took over. But that's how we had. That's how we wound up with one of the first ever podcasts. First ever podcast, period. But
yeah,
probably the first comedy podcast to interview comedians for sure. I would think, except maybe that guy in Canada who emailed me.
Yeah, back then, did they even have iTunes charts? And were you on them?
No, there was no iTunes charts.
None of that stuff.
No, there wasn't any podcasts. And when people would come in, and I'd say it's a podcast. And they said, what's a podcast? And my other co-host, Chris Iacono, who wound up taking over the tech side of stuff, who's really funny. He doesn't do comedy anymore, but it's a shame. He was really funny, Italian guy from Brooklyn. And I just remember, like, he's such a juxtaposition of, you know, he's like this Brooklyn guy, you know, who used to work in a deli and slice provolone, but he's also this, like, crunchy granola guy who moved to Colorado and likes hiking, and he's also this tech nerd.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't usually find a guy who looks like a Sopranos cast member, talks like a Sopranos cast member, and also can write code, you know? So that was part of what made him so fascinating. And so people would say, what's a podcast? You go, bro, I'll tell you, it's content is aggregated through these different channels. And basically, when you have an RSS feed, and then people would be like, what? And I just go, Chris, forget it. It's just a college radio show on the internet, you know? Yeah. Just forget it. Like, I remember Lonzo Bowden came in, and he was just like, this is incredible. Like, this is going to be the future and everything. And I didn't even think it would be the future. I just thought it was another way to get out the show.
Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, that's interesting. Because Alonzo, he's like, and this is revolutionary. Like, he said, the way you guys are doing radio, it's like just conversational. It's not, he said, I've done so much morning radio. It's never like this. It's very real. It's very loose. It's like, and Janine Garofalo also, when she came in and did it, she was like, this is different. This is like jazz. You know, and I remember these things stuck with me, and I'm like, maybe we're onto something, you know?
Yeah, definitely compared to like that morning radio show where you fly into a town and you got to be funny to sell the tickets. And
right.
So Darren, so you met Snoop Dogg, and you're just like, wow, wow, ooh. And you're just trying to like grab those people as they're turning the dial.
Right.
And, you know, come see me tonight at Chuckles. You know?
Yeah.
And then this is a lot more like...
And then if you start talking real, then people go, I don't know, that doesn't get sound funny, that guy.
Right.
You know,
and then the DJs get all nervous. Yeah. Just like...
Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's what people were used to until that, you know? Yeah. I mean, so when we started doing it, and it was college radio, so I could sort of make it what I wanted it to be, and no one was telling me what it had to be, and I had a little seniority at the radio station there at that point, and I'd actually helped them build the studio, so nobody... Even at the college, was telling me how to run my show, which was good.
After college, how did you keep your podcast going?
So I kept the studio going. I just kept like one credit hovering for a long time just to keep the studio. And then even when I graduated, I worked out a deal to keep the studio. So I was in that studio for like 7 years.
Wow. I get it, though.
It was like, the only thing that was of value about college to me. I don't remember anything from college except...
Oh, that would suck. You know, like my podcast is way over there. I gotta... Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, college was, I thought, a big waste of time, and I was going to drop out of college. I was ready to drop out, and there used to be a website called laugh.com, where you could order interviews with comedians that had come on CDs.
Oh, yeah, I think I was on that.
On laugh.com?
I think I did, or they interviewed me, but with Bob Fisher from the Ice House, did he have anything to do with it?
Could be. This is
maybe
like,
not. I don't know.
You couldn't find interviews with comedians. This is like 2002, 2001. Yeah. Where were you going to find, you didn't have YouTube, you didn't have, you know, the internet wasn't what it is. And I wanted to hear, like, what Jerry Lewis thinks, what Johnny Carson thinks, you know, what Jerry Seinfeld thinks. So I bought these laugh.com interview CDs.
Yeah.
And they were like real, like, in-depth interviews with these great comedians. So I'm like ready to drop out of college. I'm going to drop out on Monday. I've told my family. They're upset. But I said, look, I just want to do comedy. I don't want to continue with college. And I think it's a big waste of my time and money. And I'm done. And over that weekend, I popped in this Jerry Seinfeld laugh.com interview. And they asked him, When did you know you wanted to be a comedian? Very young. You went to Queens College, yes. Why did you go to college if you knew you wanted to do comedy? You're already doing comedy. Why would you not just focus on pursuing that? Why? It was a good question, right?
Yeah,
so why?
Yeah.
And it was very, like, it was speaking to me directly in that moment. So yeah. I thought, you can go, why would you... Why would you stay in college? And Seinfeld said, yeah, you know, it's, yeah, I was thinking that as well. And I'm like, you know, I thought about dropping out of college because I knew I just wanted to do stand-up. And he said, but I thought what was more important was to see things through. Mm. And I didn't want to set a precedent for myself in life where I don't see things through. And I knew if I dropped out of college, that would change, you know, his own constitution.
Yeah.
So he said, I think even though I knew I wasn't going to do anything with the degree, I saw it through, got the degree, you know, threw it out or whatever. I don't know what he did, put it in a drawer, and then, you know, proceeded to just pursue comedy. And I thought, he's got a good point. So yeah. I'll finish college too. And that's the only reason I finished college was because of that interview at that exact moment.
He's so good at those interviews. Talk about a modern day philosopher.
Yeah, I'd love to have him on the podcast, but it doesn't seem likely. But you never know.
That'd be great. You had George Wallace, and they're good friends.
I met Seinfeld.
You're very Jerry Seinfeld adjacent, I bet, right?
I know a lot of people that know him. I met him recently. Mark Schiff, of course. See, I wouldn't want to ask Mark to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure everybody's asked Mark to get to Seinfeld for so much of his life.
Yeah.
It's not nice. So, but I did meet Seinfeld at, George Shapiro was his manager, passed away. He was almost my manager for a minute. Didn't happen, unfortunately, but, I was invited to his memorial service at Paramount Studios. It was a really wild thing that I was even invited.
Yeah.
And, tell you who was there, Mel Brooks, Dick Van Dyke, Rob Reiner, Sarah Silverman, Larry David, Jerry Seinfeld.
Wow.
This is the crowd that was there, and for some reason I was there with Kylie. This is not long ago, like a year ago. And I said, what the hell am I doing here? This must have been a huge mistake.
Yeah.
And it probably was a mistake. I think it was a clerical error that I was even invited. But I walked around very displaced after. I enjoyed the... Everyone spoke about him, and I enjoyed it, and I thought, you know, this is great. He's a legendary guy that I don't really know. You know, I met him, and for a second got excited that he wanted to work with me, and then it didn't pan out, and
I was terribly disappointed. What if they had that moment where they were like, let's get a young man up here, Danny, and you're like,
This is a guy he rejected.
Yeah.
Let's tell us all, what was it like to be rejected by him? That would be hilarious. We wanted to have him here just to talk about the sheer and utter disappointment, the sinking feeling that he felt when he was never heard back again. Just tell us about that. That really shines a light on how important he was to know how horrible you felt that he didn't want anything to do with you. But but anyway, so I was there and I met Seinfeld afterwards and I told him, you know, how much he means to me, and he could seemed like he couldn't have cared less, which is probably what you'd expect.
Yeah.
And then I said, hey, I'd love to get a photograph with you.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
And he goes, no, thanks. No, thanks.
Yeah.
So that was it. That was, it wasn't like, you know, Mark said, you know, in fairness, he said George Shapiro was like a father to him.
Oh,
and he said, even though he doesn't show a lot of emotion, he was really hurting that night. So, and I didn't catch it because, and I should have intellectually, but he put on such a good face when he got up and spoke, and he acted like he was totally, he said, you know, I'm cool with everything, you know, he lived a great life, I'm glad, and it seemed like, I took him at very face value, but Mark, who knows him very well, said, no, you know, he doesn't show his emotions, but he was very emotional that night, and he said, I don't think he would have been like that with you under different circumstances, and I believe, you know, Mark is pretty astute fella, so and he knows him, so.
And it's tough that, you know, when they say like never meet your heroes, but sometimes it's you know, I was at the Improv one night and they were like, this is when Bud was alive, and they were like, Bud's coming, you can't stand in the aisle, and I was right by the sound booth, and so I looked back and there was an empty chair, and I there was a person sitting behind the empty chair, and I said, excuse me, is anybody sitting here? And then the person that was behind it looked up at me, and it was Jerry, and he goes, no. And I said, do you mind if I sit here? And he goes, go ahead. Uh-huh. And I sat down, and then he picked up the chair and moved back about 8 feet. Because he was watching a comedian. And then that night it kind of hurt because I was like, oh, man, I wasn't going to bug him. But then I realized, like, oh, yeah, from...
Right.
He might think, here comes a guy that's going to want to talk to me and ask questions. Right. And, you know.
Probably not unusual. Right.
Right,
and he doesn't know you from anyone else.
Exactly. I'm just a figure in the dark that's like, is anybody sitting here? Could I sit here? And then.
There were many times I could have met him and I chose not to.
Right.
When Lucian Hold died, who was the manager of the Comic Strip Live club in Manhattan that I used to play, I was at Lucian's funeral and I was sitting right behind Seinfeld. Like, the whole time, I could have tapped him on the shoulder. Or it was in a church, and, it was like church seating. We're very, very close. And I thought, I could say hi to Seinfeld, but I said, I don't want to. It's a funeral. I wind up doing it at a memorial service, but not at a funeral.
Right.
But I said,
I draw my line.
So I said, okay.
Maybe
I don't
a wedding. Maybe you'll talk to. Maybe you'll get that photo at a wedding.
Another time, I was at the Comedy Cellar, and there was Seinfeld sitting at the table with Tom Papa, and I walked by, and Tom Papa said hello to me, and I thought I could take this opportunity to parlay the hello with Tom Papa into hello, nice to meet you, Jerry Seinfeld. Yeah. But I thought, I don't want to do that because I looked at Seinfeld and he had a look on his face like, please don't. And the look said it. So I didn't.
Yeah.
And then I thought, okay, well, I'm getting old now and you never know. I'd like to meet him. And I met him and it was, it was what I told you it was. So,
I think you'll meet him again. And even if it never have that, the interaction, like, that would be really, really cool.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I happen to be, I have a 2-seat bicycle. I'm going to be in the neighborhood. Would you like the front of the, let's go for it. That's never probably going to happen. But I enjoy him in interviews. I love hearing him talk.
Yeah.
That's the only friendship I need with him.
It's on
but
his
I would
terms.
Love to hear you talk to him. I mean, honestly, it's like,
I'd love
would,
to hear me talk to him.
You know.
But one time, many years ago, maybe 20 years ago, my brother Josh was out in L.A. I was in L.A. Neither of us lived here. We were just visiting. And there's a whole other set of stories from that visit that were pretty interesting. I wound up having a short-lived friendship with Andrew Dice Clay because of that visit.
Wow.
Which was a whole other story. But we decided to drive.
He's different, right? I've met him. I met him like when he's not on, and he's been very nice to me. I've only met him a couple times in that kind of situation where we're in a green room and he drops the, and he's really cool.
Yeah.
But I don't know how he really is, but he seems cool. He knows how to like be cool in that situation.
I got a good story, but it would take up probably its own podcast. So.
Okay. Can we save it? Can you?
I'm saying I don't want to do it.
I'm saying would you come back and do the podcast again?
Sure, anytime.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you come back? This is
my house. I come back here every day. So anyway.
Wait, let me rephrase it. Can I come back and have you on the podcast?
Yes, I love it.
All right,
love
good,
it.
Good.
I'd be honored. So, my brother and I are driving to Vegas. I don't think we'd ever been to Vegas before. We're like, this will be so exciting. And we have this rental car. We're young. And everything is so exciting. It's like, I think it's our first time in L.A., except when we were little kids with our parents, right? So we're driving to Vegas. And and keep in mind also, we're coming from New York where we never drove.
Oh.
So we're in a car. We got really excited. We're speeding along. And then we didn't know rules like you can't go over like a not broken line, to change lanes. So we get into the carpool lane without, and whether or not we knew it, I don't think we knew it. But even if we did know it, we probably still would have done it.
Yeah.
So we got into that lane. And then, whoop, whoop, you could do better than me.
The police pull over.
So police pull us over because we're speeding and we just went over the white line. Mm. And we didn't signal.
The double yellow line, probably.
We went into the carpool lane from the regular lane.
Yeah.
And where you're not supposed to enter. And then my brother and I decided, let's both pretend to be Seinfeld when they come over.
So
we both did these Seinfeld impressions. And we go, officer, I didn't know I was speeding. And my brother's going, I didn't know I was speeding either.
Did the guy know you were doing an impression?
No, we got the ticket, but we're going to get the ticket anyway. Let's both be Seinfeld.
Did you have
speeding? I didn't know. He didn't know we were speeding. Come on. on.
Yeah.
It must have been a bizarre day. You pulled over these two Seinfeld impersonators.
Oh, that's hilarious. But you got a good laugh out of it. Brother bonding. Yeah. And, you know, in a trip. Oh, dude, I never would do that. First of all, I taught traffic school for a little bit when I moved to L.A.
Yeah.
So, and I used to have a roommate that went through the police academy. He never made it, but he was telling me, when you get pulled over, you got to put your hands on 10 and 2 and turn the dome light on and just be very, roll all the windows down. Uh-huh. And so I usually put on like some old soft music to make the cop feel very relaxed. Like, I remember one time I put on like, oh, give me a home, bar the bar. You know, I'm just looking, I'm not joking.
That's probably what the serial killers play.
Exactly.
Also.
I know. And I'm like, hello, how are you? And just real, you know, but I wouldn't. What to do?
We got a real psychopath here. Exactly. He's playing Home on the Range. I'm getting
home
any backup.
On the Range. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's it. That was it. I was just, And my son's going through traffic. He's going through, he's 15 and a half, so he just got his written, he passed the written test. I don't know why the camera's that way. I keep turning. We're slowly but surely facing the hand watch sign behind us.
And that means it's time for an ad, folks. Did you know that?
Yeah. Whenever you hear the rooster in the backdrop, don't forget to like and subscribe. That's right. When you're on go to iTunes, give us some ratings, 5 stars. If you're on YouTube, thumbs up and comment. Okay. And by the way, so yeah, my son, he passed the written test. So now we're doing my wife ordered the magnetic student drivers, you know, on all over the door and the bumper and stuff. Uh-huh. So we're going through that driving, like, you know, don't cross this line and watch out for that and go slow. And we're more like on the cautious side. Like, even when you said speeding, the father of me is like, don't speed.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to be at that stage of life with your.
It is. How many children do you have now?
Three-year-old and a one-year-old. So.
Wow. Boy
two
and a girl.
Two girls.
It's interesting because on some of the older episodes, you're like, yeah, one day I'll have kids. Or maybe, you know, whatever you said. You didn't have children at the time.
Yeah.
And now you have two children, a two-year-old and a three-year-old.
It happens fast, you know, within 3-4 years. Yeah.
It's great. You see them grow. And I love all the stuff. Like inside, you had like the little giraffes and the.
Yeah.
I love that. Every stage is great for the kids, you know.
I did not know that I was going to love it. Yeah. So much being a father, but it's really one of the great surprises of my life, you know, that this is fun. Because I don't know, my dad, you know, he's a great dad and everything, but I don't think he ever seemed like he was having fun with it. You know, he always seemed like, I'm being very kind to him in the way I'm putting this, but, you know, he'd always be like, you boys are stressing me out.
Damn Seinfeld impressions. Dad, what do you mean?
My sons are idiots, you know? So I'd look at that and be like, oh boy, it looks like, you know, it doesn't look fun to be a dad. I feel bad that my dad went into this, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I know he loves us, but I mean, he certainly, even then he'd always be like, it's so expensive having kids, you better be ready and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd be like, oh, I'm going to save myself all that headache and not do that. And then, you know, having kids, I don't know. I mean, we're different, my dad and I, but, you know, I certainly don't relate. I know I do relate that you need money, but I don't relate to the stress, thank God. And I hope I maintain that way, but. I mean, of course there's stress about it, but I just love it. I love being a dad. I'm enjoying every second of it so far. So.
I do too. I love it, man. We only have, we have one son and, you know, we do these videos where we go father, son bonding and, you know, that's the thing. Whenever you're into, a lot of times it's great to get your children into it too, because when they get older they'll want to come back and, like, if you like fishing, then they're like, hey dad, can we go fishing? Or, so, you know, I got them into, like, you know, I like doing, you know, my wife, we always go hiking, and she's like, yeah, he doesn't have a choice. Like when he was really little, like that, he's gonna.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Yeah, we're going to... She used to run marathons. Yeah. Well, that's what we do, you know, so...
I got my girls into mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese. I think I said like Macintosh. Macintosh computers coding. Mac and cheese. I love mac and cheese. Oh my
God. Yeah, mac and cheese. Yeah. Yeah. The rooster kind of punctuated my joke there.
He did.
You know, it was almost like the symbol, you know.
And, yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if your children, you know, if they get into like podcasting and, you know, and or yeah. you know, something like this, maybe entertainment or the relaxing style. You have a lot of stuff here. This is a.
What if the rooster just goes off again and then I go, will you knock it up? And I start chasing it around in this Benny Hill-esque type of way in the background of the camera. I mean, that would be a good comedy. Yeah. I'm tripping all over the place and the rooster's jumping over the microphones and there's feathers flying everywhere. And you go, that's our show for today, folks. Make sure to like and subscribe. Right.
Yeah, and yeah. You're like, I love my daughters, but he's checking you. You get all like.
I become like the dad character. Yeah, you're stressing me out. My chickens are idiots.
Yeah. Like, whoa, Danny. What a...
Well, he seemed like a nice guy for most of it.
Yeah, for the first half of the podcast. Yeah. And he wrung those chickens' necks.
I got the Homer Simpson.
Ryayada.
Yeah. He's literally choking the chicken, folks. That's and right. That's the end of the show.
And cue the rooster. Yeah.
Now he won't do it. Oh! He's a showbiz ham.
Oh, I didn't know. Did you make them do that? Like when I have a remote. Have a remote. I was gonna say when I did the rooster imitation, he did it back. Is that
right?
Is that how that works? Or
I don't know. I don't know what goes on in his head.
I don't know.
Not that one.
I want to ask you a couple. I have so much to cover, and like I said, I'd love to do another episode with you. But okay, let's get to the movie.
Okay.
So you have a movie, a documentary that you made, that you put out there, and I know you've had a showing, and you're going to do another one. Another one's coming up.
Yeah, so there's one more, you know, until there'll be another one at some point, I hope.
Yeah.
There's no other plans at this point for another showing. So this is the only one
Make sure you
currently
get that
mic. On the books.
Oh, perfect.
So it's in Encino next Wednesday. We're recording this a week before it. I don't know when this comes out, but it'll be the 26th.
Yeah, I was going to look of April.
April, 7:30 p.m. at the Lamley Theater in Encino. It's the town center. It's called the Lamley Town Center.
Wednesday, April 26th? Wednesday, April 26th.
And the film is produced by Stand Up Records. And it's a half documentary, half stand-up special that I shot in Barcelona and Madrid and Girona in Spain. So it's like tracing my roots and my Jewish heritage, and we kind of got into the Jewish stuff a little bit, and I was curious to find out more once I started getting into it. And I went there, and I did a stand-up special, and at the same time, I went back to where my family, or at least some of them, originated from. And, you know, I kind of explored the emotions behind that, and it was interesting, and, you know, and then I goofed around Spain, and so it's like, it's funny, it's got some deeper parts to it, and it's got stand-up, and I like how it turned out in the end, so I hope people will come and see it. If you're in California or a neighboring state, you can get in the car and come to Encino. I guess it's a big ask for a neighboring state, but you know, who knows? Yeah. What if you want an excuse to do something?
If you're in Oregon and you want to come down, that's a neighboring state. That's
a neighboring
state. That'll be a nice 9-hour drive, but
you could jump on a flight.
You know, it's amazing that you're having that the film got made, and then you had this idea, you did it, and it's actually being shown in a theater. A lot of times people, they never get around to doing anything, you know, or if they do, it ends up, you know, on YouTube or something.
Right.
I mean, that the fact that you, like,
it's
got it together.
Yeah, so this will be the third theater that it showed at. It showed at a theater in Lincoln Center in New York.
Wow.
And then in Santa Monica at the Lamley Theater there, and then it went well there, and they offered me to show it at their other theater in Encino. So I'm very excited. It's very cool seeing your film up on a movie screen. I don't know how many people ever get to do that, and I feel like really privileged that I got to do that, you know. And I don't want to sound in any way pretentious about it, because I don't ever want to sound pretentious. It's not a good way to sound, but you know, I like to sound pretentious, folks. I do my best to try and sound, at least part of the interview, I always like to sound a little pretentious.
Yeah. I know he sounds like a humble guy with roosters in the background, but.
Well, anytime you talk about film, right, you really run the risk of like being pretentious, you know. Yeah, you know, the film world has really embraced it, you know.
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's. I mean, you use the word film, it's already a little pretend. You go a movie that's a little better. Yeah, the movie, you know, the film, the movie. Film,
the movie.
Yeah. The flick. The flick is like even like, I made a flick.
I made a picture about.
A picture. Yeah. The picture is like already getting into a different generation.
Yeah, your grandpa said that. Yeah, my son made a picture.
Hey, he made a nice picture there. It's a good one. He's got.
Hey, is this part in the movie? I heard you talk with Mark Schiff about it, and it really resonated with the idea. I can really visualize what happened when you were in, I want to say, Spain, and you. After you were at the temple, you guys had dinner at the rabbi's house.
Right.
And you had to walk maybe two blocks.
Right. So that wasn't in the movie because our electricity was off because it was Shabbat. But I'll tell you about it. We had to walk a few blocks from the synagogue to the rabbi's house. And they had armed guards that accompanied us on this walk because anti-Semitism is so bad in Europe. And there have been so many attacks on Jews who especially are visibly Jewish, like wearing a yarmulke, and you know, some Jews, you know, you can blend in, you know, but if you look the part and you're dressed in the dress, you really are a target. And I was like, you hear about anti-Semitism here and it exists, and every now and then unfortunately we hear about attacks that happen, but it's not front and center in your mind when you live in America. But in Europe and in Spain especially, it was so in my face that we had these guys with like machine guns walking us a few blocks, and as we're walking, I see like, you know, regular folks walking around and looking at us like we're convicts, you know, being marched to the bus to be like taken away or something.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of feelings came up inside of me for that. You know, I feel, first of all, like I felt like we'd done something wrong.
Yeah.
And then all we were was just us, you know. And then I also, you know, and then of course they're there to protect us, so it's not even like a punishment, it's a good thing that they were there. But it was the whole thing was very jarring for me. And then I thought about, like, you know, Jews in history have been arrested for being Jewish, you know. And I don't like talking too much about the Holocaust because it's a mood killer. Yeah, exactly. It really kills the mood. But you know, like,
I know.
But that, you know, in those situations, the guys with guns were not their friends, right? And they were still, it's just for being, you know, what you were born as, you know?
It's interesting when you said that, like, you're like, when you're, you know, visibly like, oh, this person, you know, it wasn't like, like, you know, like, wow, like, because I think you just said it right now too about some people can kind of blend in or whatever, you know. And I think one time you said you were in an Uber and this guy was going off and you were just like, this guy doesn't know I'm, you know.
He's like, Hitler was a great man, bro. Yeah. this is like Mexican American. He's like, yo, Hitler was a great man, bro. Look it up, Time Magazine, Man of the Year, bro. Yeah. He had a lot of great things to say. He's like, he goes, you know, like the media, bro.
Yeah.
They want us to think that Hitler was like this bad guy, bro. But he was a great man. And I was like, well, I have to look at that, Hitler being a great guy. You know, I'm like telling him I'm Jewish at this point.
He's like,
I'm telling you, I'll give you some podcasts to listen to. And
you're like, stop me at the 7-Eleven. Hey, I'll see you later. I would just be like,
yeah,
you know, but. I'm excited about the movie coming out, man. That's another showing. And do you talk at the theater? Like, do you do a little speech at the beginning or the end? Or?
At the end, I do a Q&A.
Yeah,
yeah. And if you want to cut this part, you can.
I just realized. I wonder if I have to cut that last part because
why?
What if about the when you did the character of the cab driver? What if somehow the algorithm thinks we're putting a message out there? You know what I mean? I'm like no context,
the
man.
The AI just puts a quote under the episode. Exactly. Hitler was a great man. Episode 456.
Danny Lobel. It's like no. I don't know.
No, I'd say this. Yeah. I don't know if you'll want to cut this, but there was a comedian who we both know.
Yeah. Okay.
I won't name him.
Well, let's face that way a little bit.
Was a comedian we both know that that I was friendly with and played the improv a lot. And he wound up going on some really anti-Semitic tears.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah,
on his podcast, and it kind of broke my heart because he was such a sweet guy, and I really liked him. I always thought he was really insightful, and I had him on my podcast at one point, and I really liked the guy, you know. And part of me, like, I still like him, you know, even though I'm hurt by what he's said about Jewish people, and I think it's bad and it's dangerous to do that for the sake of, you know, the safety of my people, myself, and my family. But, you know, I just thought he was such a wonderful guy, and it always breaks my heart that happened. And like, to know somebody.
Yeah.
And then I heard the things he said, and I was really hurt by it, more than I've been hurt by any other anti-Semitism, because I had such great respect for him, you know, comedically and philosophically, and I thought he was really a wonderful guy, and
you know what and this isn't on that level at all, but you know what I did the other night, which I think there was a comedian. It's funny how comedians there's a comedian that I like and admire, but part of me doesn't. I don't know. There's something that irritates me about him, and also, like, one time and this is so petty, but you know, I was on the phone with this guy once for about a half hour, and during the pandemic. And, you know, everyone's lonely and we're talking. And then I go, hey, you know what, man? Would you like to do my podcast? And it's a phone call, you know, because that's what we talked about earlier. And then he just changed 180 on me and was like, I don't do anyone's podcast. You know, he's like, I do the biggest ones. There's no reason to do any of the other ones. And I don't even want to imitate him right now, because if I imitate him, you knew who I'm talking about to the audience. But and then I just, after that, I kind of harbored, like for about a year there, I was like, you know what? I thought we were friends. And in my mind, I'm like, but here's what I did the other day. I saw him. Uh-huh. And I know, you know, I just kind of, I walked by him and I said like a little prayer, you know, just like, and as I touched him, I was like, how you doing? And then I was just like, God bless him, you know, and just to kind of, even myself, because I don't want to have you know, I don't know.
You don't have that anger.
Yeah, I don't have that. And also, I'm not really angry. I was just more like,
or that resentment or whatever it is.
Yeah,
feeling.
Yeah.
I know what you're getting at. I get the feeling, you know, from people like that sometimes too. And like, it hurts you, because what really they're saying is you're asking me to do your thing. You think you're important enough for me,
right?
To spend time doing this with you.
And I was like, dude, we're already on the phone. Why can't this be
why would you think that I would lend my greatness
exactly
to your petty existence?
Yeah.
Right. Look, you know, I don't think, you know, I'm not in a position where I'm getting asked to do millions of podcasts. And maybe if I had more of a career or whatever, notoriety, people would do that, and I'd have to become really selective with the podcast. Personally, I think if it was a friend of mine, I would still do it. I can't imagine doing that with a friend. But, you know, I don't know this person or where they were coming from or anything. But but where I'm at, I very seldomly turn down an opportunity to do a podcast. It happens, but what I realized is, like, everything's an opportunity, and I'm not so opportunistic. You know, it's not like everything's an opportunity to get ahead, but everything's an opportunity for something. It's an opportunity to learn something. It's an opportunity to become closer with someone. It's an opportunity to say something yourself and be like, oh, I didn't even know I felt that way, or I just came up with that, and maybe I'll write that down later or whatever. You don't know what may come out of it in terms of your own personal development, or it might be super fun, you know? Or you may find you connect with. And actually, here's something interesting. I just emailed this podcast that I really like in New York and asked if I could be on their podcast. And I thought, I may not hear back from them. They're kind of a big podcast.
Yeah.
And they wrote back and they said, oh, yeah, we heard you on this other podcast and you were great. And I thought, oh, they've mistaken me for someone else, because I've never been on that other podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So then I said, you know, look, I feel embarrassed to say this, but I don't even remember being on that podcast. I've been on a lot of podcasts, but I don't remember. I'm thinking, I never was on that podcast. Then I Googled it just to see if I was on that podcast. Yeah. Sure enough, I was on that podcast for over an hour.
Wow.
And I said, oh, okay, now I remember that. But it was like one of these really little ones
Yeah.
that... you know, somebody asked me to do it, and I was like, okay, you know, why not? And it was years ago, and I forgot I even ever did it. And now here's this big podcast,
yeah,
and they heard me on that, and they liked me, and now it's opened a door for me to do their podcast. So how about that, you know?
Exactly.
So
I like, especially when it's a phone call podcast. I mean, yeah, this isn't even, you know, I mean, here I'm, you know, setting stuff up, but there's a few that I've done where I'm actually enjoy it. Like one, it was so effortless. The guy goes, yeah, you could do it while you're riding your bike. Literally, had like AirPods on, and I was riding my bike doing a podcast.
Yeah.
It was great. You know, I've done, yeah, you know, where I'm in the car, and there's this one I used to do all the time. Like he goes, hey, are you available for 20 minutes? Mm-hmm. And then in it, and I would, you know, I'd be like, yeah, I'm gonna be in the car anyways, you know, right, like right, going 2 miles an hour in bumper traffic. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
You know, so
I like the word podcast. You know, it's a cute word. It's got a cute sound to it.
Yeah.
And you ever hear British people say it? Podcast.
Podcast.
Podcast. Even the way they say it, it's even cuter. Podcast.
I had a podcast before Pocket Party, and was I had a partner back in, and we did it for about 3 years, and from 2010 to about 2013. And it reminded me when you said you would tell people, what's a podcast? Like, mm-hmm, at that time, some people did, some people didn't.
Right.
And I remember this guy, he saw me at Target, and he was this Latino guy. He goes, I love your comedy, man. You know, this is back when I was there. You're the, mm-hmm, rooster, man. You're so funny. Where are you going to be playing? Yeah. Where are you going to be performing? And yeah, I was like, well, you know, I go, get this. I have a podcast. He goes, what's that? And I'm like, so yeah, and everyone has a phone, and then you just go to see this right here. And I'm trying to walk him through.
Right.
And then after about the third step, he just glazed over and he's like, right, oh, okay, all right. You're not going to be like the Laugh Factory or the Ice House or something? I was like, oh, man.
I remember trying to show people, yeah, how to subscribe to the podcast, and that was like a new thing. And
yeah,
doing that and like, okay, so this is the app. And
yeah, it's easy. It's way easier now, though. Even yeah, YouTube.
People, you just people know now.
Yeah. I mean,
but people didn't even know that that app existed, or they'd have to download it on their phone. Now it comes on the phone.
Now it's Spotify. Just go to Spotify.
Cause yeah,
I guess the big ones are Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. And then yeah, after that, it's who knows. But
yeah,
And that's another thing that's changed since you started. Like, you know, now there's the clips pop up on, you know, TikTok,
right,
and all this kind of stuff.
It's crazy. It's you know, when I started, there was no, obviously, as we talked about, there was no WTF, there was no Joe Rogan, there was no Adam Carolla podcast. Mm. There were all, I had a foot in the door to be first, and I blew it. And I did everything right, but it wasn't meant to be. But I had all these people came on the show because no one else was asking them to do, yeah, it, because there was no other podcasts. So I got to have George Carlin come in.
Wow.
And called in twice as well.
Are your episodes still out there somewhere?
Somewhere. Are some of them are. Some of them are gone, which is sad. Like,
I know.
One of my favorite ones that I can't find is one of the first ones I ever did was I interviewed Harvey Pekar,
oh,
of American Splendor, who was like a mentor to me. And he's the reason I make comic books. I'll plug the comic books, folks. Please buy my comic books. It costs a lot to make comic books, so please buy them. I don't make any money. I still never break even, but
is
I like
called
doing
Fair
it.
Enough?
Fair Enough. You go to fairenoughcomic.com. It's a passion. I write comic books about my life. They're all true stories in the vein of what Harvey Pekar used to do on American Splendor. So without getting into the whole story of it, Harvey Pekar became a friend. He became a mentor. He encouraged me. He told me to go for it in life when I really had no confidence. And he was one of the first people I ever interviewed. And I don't have that interview, and I wish I had it. And I would love to go back and listen to my voice cracking with nervousness and you know, talking to him. But he's dead now. So, I wish I could find that recording of me and Harvey Pekar.
Wow.
But some of them are up there, you know.
Good luck on Wednesday. I'm gonna get this out there. I'll tweet it. I'll help you out any way I can. And you know, it'd be interesting if you would like. No one's ever said a prayer on the podcast. You want to do one on our way out? Would that work or no?
Yeah, I could do it. But I won't do like a Hebrew prayer.
Or it could be in English.
But Well, let me think about that. It's an interesting request. I like it. You know, I went to see Don Rickles in concert.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he ended his shows with blessing the audience.
Wow.
I thought that was really amazing.
How did he do it? Do you remember what he said?
He said something like, you know, I want to thank God for this opportunity. And
yeah.
and thank and may God bless and keep every one of you, and then if you watch old clips of him, you could see him do that sometimes, where he would do that. He would bring God into his
look at that.
His outro at the end of his shows.
Yeah,
he would.
I've been ending my set with God bless everyone, have a great. Usually up positive.
Yeah,
because I feel like there's a lot of. There can be negative energy, and then
right.
You know how these algorithms, they show people fighting, people this, and it's like, and I'm like, I want to, that's when I started the podcast 5 years ago, this one, I wanted to, you know, find, you know, kind of like add the light to the world, and I would find little motivational quotes and throw that in there at places, and
that's great.
I think I need to circle back and bring that back in, you know, a little bit, because I do, but I don't, I mean, there used to be a time where I'd be like, I'd start the show out with, hey, here's something, and then my favorite, you know, what Socrates quote or whatever. And so I thought that'd be interesting because you're a spiritual guy, very positive guy, loving guy. And
thank you.
It just hit me right now.
I like being described that way. It's nice.
You're like, tell my wife the next time we get into an argument. Yeah. No. Hey, it's because of loving.
As if that's the only side to me. But that's great. You know, that's the side you want people to know about. You know, not that I've got some real dark side, but you know, that I'm aware of. But, but you know, we're all human. But that's nice to be thought of that way. I feel like that's an accomplishment for me. But I would say that too. That whoever's listening to this, you know, God bless you, and you should be healthy, and you should be mentally, physically, spiritually, and financially healthy. You know, and you should always have positivity in your life. You should, because it's so easy to get dragged into negativity. I'm a guy who went through real depression at certain points in my life, and like really bad, like clinical depression, medicated for it, and all that fun stuff. And being depressed is one of the worst things, one of the worst places you can be. You know, because you could be anywhere, and that place is depressing. If you're depressed, it travels with you. So you could go to Aruba, and it wouldn't be Aruba; it would be Depression Land. You know, you could go anywhere, and it would be depression because you live in the depression. You don't live in the world. So I don't know if this is like a hybrid prayer / my advice. I don't know, but
no, I get it.
But just as someone who
I love it,
who really suffered from depression and had to claw my way out of it. And that's really how you have to be. Like, there are days that you just have to, when you're depressed, there are days that you have to just go through the motions of life as if you're not depressed, just to pull your way out of it. And there are things you could do. I'm not a therapist, and I'm not a doctor or anything to help you. But what I'll tell you is, obviously, you need to get good sleep. That's the very first thing. And you should change your diet, and you should get rid of processed foods as much as possible. But on a spiritual level, connect to God and connect to appreciation, because the remedy that I found for depression is appreciation. And if you appreciate life and you appreciate all the things you have, and you don't, and anytime you catch yourself slipping into what you don't have and feeling sorry that you don't have this or that. For me, still, like, I rent this house, and it's, I've been renting it for a decade, and it's never a solid, I never solidly feel like I'm here, because I could always be out. The landlord at any point is always threatening to, that he wants to knock the property down and build on it, and it makes me feel very uneasy, and I wish I could buy a house, but I don't have enough money for a down payment, and sometimes that kind of gets to me, and you just remember to refocus. That's just one example.
And but have I'm that, just like trying you said, to an make attitude of gratitude.
Attitude of gratitude. Just remember, why am I thinking about what I don't have? Think about what I do have. You can always aspire to have what you don't have, and you can work towards it, but don't obsess over it. Don't think, start feeling sorry for yourself that you don't have it, and start feeling victimized, and don't just be grateful for all the beautiful things in your life. Be grateful. You could start just by the fact that you're breathing, and then, you know, and then if you have sight, if you're blessed with sight, you could think about that, and then, you know, taste or whatever, you go through the senses, and then, you know, if you have shoes, when you start thinking about it, you go, oh my God, I have so much. so much. And you say, you know, you be grateful to God and be grateful to your family and be happy to be alive. And we, as I said, that a nice breeze just went over us. Be grateful for those breezes. You know, that's a gift from God. Every little nice feeling that you have, anything you experience, from a breeze to a sandwich to whatever it is, that's a beautiful thing. And you're getting to have that, and you're getting to experience that, the sunshine, and you know, whatever it is, just live in gratitude, and you'll be a happy person. And if you're happy inside, then wherever you are is a good place to be.
Amen.
That's what I think.
Amen.
So anyway,
that was good.
Yeah,
that's good.
That was my, that's yeah, whatever came out when you asked me to tell him to do a prayer.
This guy's great. I could just lob a question. You could rock this podcast. This is exactly what we wanted to hear.
And then we think the mic is off. This is all shit. Yeah.
That wind, it's blowing me. Everything. My shoes are too
Why
tight.
Why did I agree to do this? I said I only do the big podcasts.
I know. I just, yeah. He was not the guy I was talking about. And I've already forgiven the guy. That was awesome,
Danny. Who put me on this?
Yeah. All right, man. Hey, you guys, this is Danny Lobel. Check him out. He's everywhere. His comic book, his movie, his old episodes, and he puts up podcasts every now and then.
Every now and then, whenever I feel like I've got it together, enough to do that. But the fairenoughcomic.com is where you could get. It's just called fairenoughcomic.com, is where you can get the comic books, and the movie is called reconquistadormovie.com is the website, and it's playing Wednesday, the 26th of
April.
Yeah, that's right. At the Lamley Theater in Encino, California at 7:30 p.m. Thank you. Yeah.
On behalf of my guest, Danny Lobel, I'm Darren Carter. Thank you so much for watching the Pocket Party Podcast. Like and review and share it. Thank you.
On behalf of myself, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Bye.
Hey, that was
Who
great.
Who booked me on?
Keep going. That camera's rolling.
That was fun. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was awesome.
It almost gets to like a Gilbert Gottfried pitch. Who booked me on this? Why am I doing this? I can't believe it.
Everybody listen to Darren Carter. We all know he's the party starter. So if you want to listen to a podcast for free, then listen to The Pocket Party Podcast.